We're going to put politics aside now and talk instead about lobsters. It's no secret that the lobster fishery in southern New England is in trouble. The population has declined by almost 80% in the past few decades, in large part due to rising water temperatures. In contrast, lobsters in the Gulf of Maine to the north have been booming, and the lobster fishery there has seen record landings. Now, a new study teases apart how much of that difference is due to ocean warming and how much may be due to different conservation practices. The result is reaffirming if you're a Maine lobsterman, but a bit dismaying for those further south. Andrew Pershing is Chief Scientific Officer and head of the Ecosystem Modeling Lab at the Gulf of Maine Research Institute. Andy, welcome as always.
Hi, Heather.
Let's start in the Gulf of Maine. Lobster population there has increased more than fivefold in 30 years. What does this new research tell us about the causes of that dramatic increase?
So there have been a lot of hypotheses that people have put out that might explain the increase in lobsters that we've had in Maine. And it's really a remarkable explosion in the abundance of lobsters and in the fishery. And what we did was we put together a computer model that could take all of these ideas and basically play them against one another and try to isolate what the scale of these different factors would be. And what we found was that warming played a really important role in increasing the abundance of lobsters in Maine. But equal to the warming was the conservation practices that the Maine lobstermen have been pushing for generations to really put a lot of protections on the older, larger lobsters, and especially the older female reproductive lobsters.
So specifically, what are those conservation practices we're talking about? And when you say generations, I mean, how long have these practices been in effect?
So the system of managing lobsters in Maine has evolved since the early 1900s, and there have been kind of different phases in that development. But the system that we have now really came about in the early 1980s, and it consists of a minimum size limit where lobsters that are too small get thrown overboard so that they can grow up and become bigger. But also it includes a maximum size. So lobsters that are over a certain size get thrown back, and those don't get landed, at least in Maine. And it's basically like putting money in the bank account. These lobsters are out there. They can reproduce, and they can grow, and they can keep on producing new lobsters year after year. But then Maine also has some extra protections that we give the female reproductive lobsters. So any lobster, regardless of size, if she comes over the side with eggs on her belly, the lobsterman will carve a notch in her tail and throw her back into the ocean. And that notch will stay with her for several years. It's basically like a scar. And you're prohibited from landing lobsters that have that V-notch. And so it gives an extra protection to the reproductive females.
As you mentioned, those became part of official regulations on the lobster fishery in Maine in like the 1980s, I think you said.
Yeah.
But the voluntary practice goes back to the 19-teens, 20s, 1930s, I mean, much farther back, almost a century back. Those practices, in contrast, didn't really become part of lobster management in southern New England until like 10 years ago. Why not?
Well, it's a good question. I think one of the things that's unique in Maine was both the scale of the fishery and how local it is. And so it makes it easier for a lobsterman to really see the benefit of those practices. So if he throws a larger lobster overboard, he knows that, you know, that his buddies are not gonna catch it. Whereas I think in southern New England, the fishery is a little more diffuse and it didn't quite have that tight feedback. And so it probably those practices just didn't make as much sense to a lobsterman at the time, throwing a larger lobster overboard. That's dollars going over the side.
I'm talking with Andrew Pershing. He's Chief Scientific Officer and head of the Ecosystem Modeling Lab at Gulf of Maine Research Institute. So you used this computer model that, you know, kind of looked at the boom in Maine, and you looked simultaneously at the crash in southern New England. How much of a difference would having these practices, V-notching or throwing back the largest lobsters, according to your model, how much of a difference would having those practices in place have made to the fate of the lobster fishery in southern New England?
So one of the really cool things you can do in a computer model is you can play out experiments you could never do in nature. And so we ran a scenario where we took the Maine's management strategy and applied it in southern New England. And if you had the same oceanographic conditions, the same rate of warming, you still get a decline in lobster in southern New England. There really isn't anything you could do about that. That's coming very much from the oceanography and the rising water temperatures. But that rate of decline is very sensitive to the management. And so had they used a management process that looked a lot more like what our lobstermen here in Maine have developed, they would have been able to have a much more gradual decline and probably have been able to hold on to more of the fishery than they have now. It's a little bit, you know, Monday morning quarterback. Nobody really likes to hear that, but that's a pretty clear result from our models.
What is the lesson then for the Gulf of Maine going forward and perhaps for other fisheries that are facing warming waters? This isn't going to stop tomorrow. Water temperatures are rising, and you also used this model to look forward at the Gulf of Maine. And at some point, the water there is going to get too warm, and they'll start to see a decline as well. So how could these conservation measures help going forward?
So again, just like we saw when we ran the scenario backwards with southern New England, if we play it forward in Maine, we see that if they maintain the same conservation measures, maintain the compliance on the V-notching and the protection for the reproductive females, that yeah, we're looking at water temperatures that are going to soon become start to limit the growth of the population, and that the population will start to decline. But if the management holds on, we're looking at a decline over 30 years back to the conditions that we had in the early 2000s in Maine, when Maine still prided itself on its very robust lobster fishery.
There's kind of this temperature cutoff for lobsters, especially young lobsters, around 62 degrees water temperature that we don't fully understand what happens with, you know, warmer water and why that's so intolerable. Do we have any better handle on how these conservation measures help? I mean, I can see when you're looking at a growing population that obviously putting your most reproductive females back in the water and making sure they stay there, that's going to help a population grow. How does that help stave off the decline if the water's too warm for baby lobsters? The water's too warm.
Yeah, so the way I think of it is a lot like, you know, it's a lot like the, you know, interest rate on your savings account. So the water temperature is basically setting what that interest rate is. And 62 degrees in our model is optimum. And if you're a little colder than that or a little warmer than that, your interest rate goes down a little bit. And if you're a lot colder or a lot warmer, the interest rate goes down a lot. But if you have a lot of money in the bank, which is what the Maine fishery has been able to do with the protections that they put in place in terms of saving the older, larger lobsters, you have more money in the bank, you can still get by even if you have a slightly lower interest rate.
What has the response to this study been like among the lobster industry, both in Maine and have you gotten any response from southern New England?
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to talk to anyone from southern New England, but the response has been, I think, really great here in Maine. One of the things that's been really touching to me is talking to, you know, the older lobstermen who kind of pioneered and really had to hold strong on these size limits in some of the fights that were going on in the 90s. And they really are viewing this as their legacy. And some of the younger lobstermen, you know, guys who started fishing, you know, 5-10 years ago and have really experienced this boom, are incredibly grateful for the work and the legacy that the older generation left for them. And I think we're starting to see a commitment that this generation is going to keep that going forward for their sons and daughters.
Do you see lessons here for other fisheries in terms of how to best prepare for the changes that are already happening and will inevitably continue?
Yeah, there are a couple, I think, really important lessons. So one is the importance that these older, larger animals have in maintaining resiliency in a population. So we saw this pretty clearly in our modeling work in lobster. We've also done work with species like cod that suggest that, you know, older, larger fish just can have a really important buffering capability to a population. But I think the bigger lesson is that as we're looking forward to a world that's going to warm up, that's going to start to stress and challenge the ecosystems that we depend upon, that good fishery management in a world that's experiencing climate change starts with just really good fishery management. So if you have a stock that's healthy, that's not being overfished, those are going to be stocks that are much more easier to manage and to maintain the productivity as water's warm.
Sounds like a good old-fashioned respect your elders kind of story. Make sure you protect the biggest fish, the biggest lobsters in the population, and pay some respect to those who came before and were taking care of the resource before you dug into it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's been, I think, one of the most exciting things for us in this study.
Andrew Pershing is Chief Scientific Officer and Head of the Ecosystem Modeling Lab at the Gulf of Maine Research Institute. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Up next, a sports scientist weighs in on the Pats' chances in the Super Bowl. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.